Hello everyone, this is Tommy Ran. I'm here with the Gruck for another Between Two Nerds discussion. G'day Gruck, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Yourself?
I'm well. This week's episode is brought to you by Run Zero. I have an interview with Run Zero's Rob King about how they keep up with developments in various lists of vulnerabilities and how you can make use of that. So catch that interview on the channel out this week. So Gruck, you sent me a tweet the other day, and it actually comes from a thread that Shashank Joshi posted on X. And Shashank is The Economist's defense editor, and he often tweets interesting stuff, but occasionally he strays onto the cyber patch. And it was an interesting thread. So he attended the Oxford Cyber Forum run by the European Cyber Conflict Research Initiative, which is run by Max Smeets, or...
It's Smeets, maybe. Max Smeets is how it's spelled in English, and that's what he's going to be called.
Yeah, and it sounds like it was a good meeting. Shashank's got quite a long thread, and I thought we could just pull out a few of the elements that we either had opinions about or thought were particularly interesting. As far as I can gather from the thread, it seemed to be about the state of how cyber operations are used in the grand game, I guess, the conflict between states or the competition between states. So the piece that we'll kick off with is this kind of back and forth about what zero days are good for or how people see zero days.
Yeah. So what I found interesting was the way that they phrased their statement to me indicates that they have wrong thinking.
Right.
Yeah. So what they said specifically was, our theories rest on the idea that zero days are scarce, so countries are hesitant to use them. What, they asked, could change that assumption?
Right. So this meeting was held under the Chatham House rule, which means you can't name people. So you can talk about what they said, but you can't name them. So that's why in our discussion, there might be a bit of they, them, person said. Yeah. So there's a couple of replies that brought out. Heather Atkins, who's at Google, she says, I was at the forum and I don't think that this was a prevailing narrative. She favours the view that the cyber domain is premised currently on competition, where the only way to successfully compete is through persistent initiation, i.e. constant hacking. So this sounds a lot to me like the, what's it called?
It's persistent engagement.
That's right, yep. So you disagree with the view that Shashank first relayed.
Right.
He did caveat that by saying that one official noted. So as Heather says, maybe that's not a persistent view.
Yeah.
And then Brody, who works at CrowdStrike and is a mate, so g'day Brody, how are you? He's replied and says, my assumption based on thousands of observations is 0 days are largely unnecessary, so countries are reluctant to use them unnecessarily.
Which it's the exact same observables, but a completely different interpretation. On the one hand, you have they're so precious and rare that you never use them. And on the other hand, it's like occasions where you need to use them are so precious and rare that, you know, you never use them, which is kind of the opposite. And I have to admit, I agree with Brody on this one. Mm-hmm. I think that the Ukraine war has shown that the need for O-Day is completely overblown. I also personally think that if you're thinking about cybersecurity in terms of O-Day or specific vulnerabilities, it's a little bit too myopic. It's too laser focused. You're not catching what cyber actually is, right? Which is about systems disruptions and things like that. And so these are ways that you gain access to a system that you can disrupt it, but they're just sort of one of the ways you can do that. And if you're focused exclusively on that, you're going to miss all of the other things that are actually important.
Right, yeah. So there's lots of ways to gain access.
Right.
0 day is one of them.
Yeah, if all you're worried about is how to gain access, that's not going to get you very far in terms of cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
I believe these days it's the assume compromise mindset right? Like you assume that they're going to get access. How do you stop that from escalating? That's where you should focus on. Not on the keeping them out, because that's going to fail. You know, I feel that the understanding is just completely wrong on that one.
I think it's interesting that you say the understanding is completely wrong. I mean, I happen to agree with you, but the very first thing you started with was that they're taking the same data set and arriving at very different conclusions. So what's right. the data or information or what's the special source that you and I and Brody are taking to get from that data to a very different conclusion? What's the piece of information that will convince this person that they're incorrect?
I don't know beyond actual experience. That doesn't feel like a good answer, because it shouldn't be like, you know...
Just because I know and you don't.
Yeah. Excuse me, but I happen to be an authority, so...
Well, what I was thinking yeah. is there's a whole landscape of things that are happening all the time, and the vast majority of them don't rely on ODA, and therefore it can't be the be-all and end-all.
Right. Yeah, I think if you just look at business email compromise, you know, BEC, which costs millions, even billions every year, and ODA is just not an issue. Like, I don't think they even know how to spell ODA, but those guys are doing huge amounts of hacking with just email access and phones.
Yeah, going back to the tweet, it's our theories rest on the idea that 0 days are scarce, so countries are hesitant to use them. I suppose there's two parts. Are 0 days really scarce?
It depends on what player you are, I think, right? It's sort of like fully automatic firearms are scarce. If you're in the suburbs of Japan, they're very scarce. And if you're in Donbass, they're not.
Mm.
I don't think that you could say that our theory rests on the idea that fully automated firearms are very scarce.
Yeah. And then the second part is, so countries are hesitant to use them. I think to me, that's the part where if 0 day were the only way that you could get access, then yes, you would be hesitant to use them. But I think there's so many options. It's a smorgasbord.
Yeah.
And why order the filet mignon yeah. when you can just get a
when you've got a hamburger at home.
And yeah, it'll be just as good most of the time.
Yeah, you've got the reconstituted soy paste at home, so why get the filet mignon, right? You know? And I think that's kind of it. It's, you know, like the only way of getting like protein and nutrition is through filet mignon. So people are, you know, hesitant to get filet. And it's like, but is that true?
Do you think what Heather said, and I'll just repeat it, that
yep.
she doesn't exactly say this, but the way the cyber domain works is that you need to constantly engage. She calls right. it persistent initiation. And so in that view, there's lots of ways. There's a smorgasbord, like I said. Mm. And so if you're just constantly browsing or gorging your way through that smorgasbord, that's the way to get an advantage in the cyber domain.
Yeah, and I think what she was getting at is that while what this person said was an interesting comment to note, it was not a reflection of the broader consensus
mm-hmm.
at that conference, which I'm happy to hear. And yeah, I think she's right. This is something that we've talked about a lot, is that you need to stay sharp and you need to stay active, not just in terms of like it's a competition and we're more cyber than you, like. Yeah, it's not just a matter of being better in that sense. It's that your skills atrophy, they rust very quickly. And, you know, as we've just said, you can have theories that depart from reality very quickly. And it's good to have some sort of grounding in some experience of like, okay, well, we believe that this is a thing that's going to work. And then you try it and it doesn't work. And then you can correct it and do something better. Or you try it and it does work. And you can say, okay, it works, and we know that it has these effects. That's what I think the value is.
Right. So there's actually a part of Shashank's thread that touches on this. So this seems like a good point to segue to that. And that is discussion about whether the West or our adversaries were ahead when it comes to offensive cyber. So the tweet is, Shashank says, one person argued that the West was still better at offensive cyber. Some of the actors we count among the top of the line a lot don't even have that much operational experience. We talk a lot about the Chinese, but they have far less operational experience than we do. So that's one person's view. Now, to me, this really depends on what you describe as offensive cyber. So yeah. I wrote a paper on offensive cyber, and the definition actually came from, I think it was US, Australian, UK doctrine, where they talk about it being disruptive, you know, degrade, deny, right. destroy.
Discombobulate, yep. demonstrate.
Whereas in the broader community, offensive cyber is anything hacking. It's just that when you're in an intelligence agency, like
you want to pretend that what you're doing is not offensive, because
that's right.
you're doing espionage. It's, yeah, exactly. it's neutral.
Yeah. And so there's a different inside versus outside definition. Now, I think that he's talking about the inside definition of disrupt.
I mean, he must be, because if you're saying that China doesn't have a lot of cyber espionage experience, then you're absolutely delusional,
yep.
I think. So it must be the other one. And I got to say, like, if you're looking for operational experience and you're say, Glowing Symphony, which was when they deleted the Adobe the Adobe Photoshop licenses of ISIS and they RM'd the ISIS web forums, or the hack that they did against Iran where they wiped the center that did the...
targeting database or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, it was some sort of
New York Times reports or something like that. So who knows how accurate they actually are?
Right. The some aspect of it was we can disrupt you, and the other aspect was we can specifically target the thing that we know did this.
Mm.
Right. So there was a sort of twofold messaging in that. But if that's your operational experience, like I see you and I raise you February 24th, 2022, Russia has actually used cyber disruption in a shooting war, which I think counts for something better than Glowing Symphony.
Yeah, probably in a tweet we're not getting the entire context.
There might have been
discussion.
Some nuance.
But I thought there was another part that related to that was that in Europe, officials see a lot of positioning on critical infrastructure. Some of those were Chinese, a lot of those were Russian. And so if you're talking about those as your adversary, I would think that you would probably have to argue that the Russian forces actually have the greater and probably more recent operational experience, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Not just with gaining access, but with also with being detected and kicked out, which is useful to know. So that you can avoid that next time.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in that context, I thought it was interesting that someone would argue that. I can see where they're coming from. I think I'm with you that I don't know that I would... Yeah, maybe with the Chinese, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, Iran, yeah, almost certainly. The Iranians do not have the same operational experience as the US. But I don't think that the US can claim... I don't think they can comfortably claim to be top dog on this one.
I think it also depends what you think you're trying to do with that, right? So I think the US would try and get surgical strike integrated with conventional military.
Yeah.
And if you look at the way Chinese forces have behaved, it's hard to know whether they would be able to pull that off.
Or even if they would care. Right,
because well,
I mean, this is the other thing, is it's, you know, if you say, look, in terms of Olympic sharpshooting, we have the best team. It's like, yes, but this is an artillery match, right? Like, you know, like, you might be really, really good at this when no one's shooting back at you, but that's not the point. It's the context matters, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about possible invasion of Taiwan as a scenario. And in that case, if you're going to disrupt critical infrastructure, it seems like you need a time and a date and a plan for what to do. Do you need much more than that? That doesn't seem like a huge ask if you're pre-positioning.
It's basically make sure that you put the right date in your script, right? Make sure that there's no like time zone difference or something. It's not a particularly high bar to clear. Right. It's not like make sure that the centrifuges degrade by exactly 88% every 27 days. That's a very specific sort of thing that's hard to achieve. But turn out the lights at 8 p.m. on Saturday. Quite a lot of people can hit that one, you know.
So another thing that I thought was interesting is, and presumably this is a European official, is saying, so Shashank quoted them. So the quote is, "We have a key problem in that all our European cyber defenders at the military level are still operating within an ancient system of peacetime-crisis conflict. So we have a lot of shiny cyber commands in many allied countries with no mandate to operate during supposed peacetime." So I thought this was really interesting that I think it hits on a key problem. And cyber operations are really, really useful in peacetime. And that's the main, maybe, is it the main way that adversaries are trying to gain advantage?
Yeah. Because it's one of the main ways, for sure.
Yeah. And it's because you can't use military force in peacetime.
Right.
And so
you can't drive tanks into Paris just for the heck of it, but you can absolutely hack everything in Paris just for the heck of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if your cyber commands are sort of sitting back doing nothing during peacetime, they're actually standing by when they could potentially be the most useful.
Right. I'm going to say it's gross negligence to have a cyber command and not use it because...
during peacetime.
Not during peacetime.
Yeah.
Correct.
Wow. Gross negligence. That's a...
gross negligence. Yeah. Well, it's... Look, you're letting... It's basically like if you purchase a fighter aircraft and then you park it on the runway and you say, we're going to take it up and fly it and do maintenance afterwards as soon as war breaks out. And if you just leave it there for years and never do anything, and then you expect your pilots to be able to use it and that it's going to fly when you need it. Like, that's not how these things work. The cyber is similar in that it needs to be constantly maintained. People need to practice on it.
Right, yeah. And I think people get hung up on the, if it's military, we must use it when we're wanting to destroy things. I think the value in those organizations in peacetime is trying to disrupt adversaries.
Right. And there's no shortage of adversaries that you can go after that are absolutely fair game.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I think they're swinging away. And if you're not responding or trying to counter them somehow within whatever your legal boundaries are,
sure,
you're not partaking in the, I guess I called it a great game at the beginning of the podcast. You're not playing the great game at all. You're just sort of sitting by doing nothing.
So that reminds me, there's this very funny thing that happened right after the Russian Revolution in 1917. The Russians were fighting Germany during World War I. The revolution happened, and the Soviet government, or the communist government that started up, decided to stop fighting because they were like, this is a war between capitalists, and the working man has no place in it. And so they didn't negotiate for a peace with Germany. They just sort of walked away. And so Germany just advanced. Like, they took more and more ground until eventually the Russians had to come to the table and be like, okay, can we negotiate a peace, please? Right. It's like they just decided they're not fighting and the other side didn't agree. And...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You
know, like, I'm not going to fight you. It's like, great, that's going to be so much easier for me.
That's right, yeah. Yep, yep. There is actually another tweet in the thread that actually hits on that, which is that one official said, "We cannot out-resilience our adversaries." Mm. Every kid in the schoolyard who's bullied knows if you want to make the bullies stop, you have to stop them. So I think those tweets go together. So is there anything else?
So one of the things he mentions, Shashank Joshi says that when he was in Israel, there's a lot of concern about Russia passing advanced cyber tools and tradecraft to Iran. But then in Oxford, there was one person who noted that it would be very surprising because Russia has a history of infecting Iranian infrastructure for fourth-party collection, which is that they piggyback on Iranian spying. And to me, I don't see why those things are...
They're not inconsistent.
Exactly. It's like, why would they make the Iranians better at spying? They're already stealing everything that the Iranians steal themselves. And it's like, what?
Yeah. So you think the logic works the other way. They'll give them the advanced tools so that they can piggyback off better spying.
Exactly. Like it. I'm not sure that this logic stands. You know, I don't think that that's quite right. Similarly, I think that there's some sort of confusion where they talk about how, you know, we're all worried that Russia and China are getting closer to each other, but they keep hacking each other all the time. It's like,
right. Yep. Again, not so, in.
Like, yeah, we're worried that the US is too close to Germany, but they keep hacking Germany all the time. Like. That's what friends do, you know.
Keep your enemies close and keep your friends closer.
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of on this thing about the operational experience. I thought that the China is getting new threat actors all the time. They're getting new capabilities all the time, but they don't use it. They don't have the experience, and that seems to be sort of very.
Cognitive dissonance? Is that what you're saying?
Right. No, like, there's this perfect Mullah Nasruddin joke, which is, so the Mullah goes to market and he buys a liver, and someone says, oh, if you're going to have liver, here's a recipe to have, like, the best way to have liver. So he takes the recipe and the liver, and he's walking home, and a crow comes by and steals the liver, and he's running after it, and the crow flies away. And so he stands and he shouts, you won't enjoy it, I have the recipe. And that's what this sounds like to me is like, yeah, you might have like the most cyber actors and you might have the best capabilities, but you won't enjoy it. I have the recipe. You know, it's just like, I think you're missing the point. You know, like I don't think that that's necessarily the most important thing out of all of this, particularly when I'm not sure that the operational experience that you're bragging about even exists.
Right. Well, I mean, it sounds like it was a good conference, and I actually really appreciate Shashank taking the time to wrap it up in that way. Like, part of the point of those conferences is to share information, and I think that, like, just a thread like that gives us something to talk about. Most importantly.
I think they really would have benefited from having a couple of nerds.
That's right.
Oh, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Greg.